9 a.m. on October. No, October? How did I get October? It's 9 a.m. on March 13th.
Thank you.
I mean, come
on. For the
on.
Correction, I was getting concerned.
I know. It's still cold. Maybe that's where that came from. I don't know. Anyway, you're listening to...
We did have a little fall holiday discussion before we came in here. Maybe you did get confused.
I'm easily confused these days. If you're confused, let me clear things up for you. You're listening to Good Morning Atlanta, sponsored by World Trade Center Atlanta on Business Radio X, a proud 2013 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at AtlantaDowntown.com. I'm Dana Barrett, easy for me to say.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
And we are having problems lately getting into our building in the morning. And that is why
locked
we're
locked out on Peachtree Street.
It's very sad. And it frazzles me. I get in here and I think I'm all good. And then I push some buttons and I can't open my mouth for some reason, which is a problem when your job is to talk. It's problematic. Speaking of problems, one
yes,
problem.
I think the coffee shop should open before the radio studio.
I think so too. One of the problems many companies are dealing with right now is big data. And here to talk to us about it today is David Rodriguez from Microsoft. So welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you.
Oh, he looks like, I don't know if I want to talk on this radio show. I'll think about it. We know, in fact, that he has his Spider-Man mask in his pocket. So worst case, David will leave and Spider-Man will join us.
Yes.
Right? So before we get to big data, which we will in just a minute, we're going to hit the headlines, as we like to do here on the show. So, you know, I found some interesting ones yesterday as I was digging through looking for what we were going to kind of focus on this morning. And we like to focus on Atlanta news when we can. And sometimes we hit some national things. And obviously, there's often a crossover. The latest, of course, is that Spanx, local Atlanta company Spanx, is being slapped with a patent infringement claim.
Which is ironic because, you know, Spanx was a big that was a big part of the success, was the fact that she had patented
the original
stockings.
Spanx.
Right. Spanx.
Right. But now I guess, you know, as with all companies, God forbid you should just be happy with what you have. No, you have to grow. Right. Which is why everyone ends up with all this big data. But so they had new products. Right. And so now they came along with these tank tops. And I guess here, let's see. Total Taming Tank, Top This Tank, and Top This Cami are three products that another company is saying that they stole that from them. And that company is called Yummy Tummy. You gotta love underwear in the news. So much fun to talk about. And of course, it was founded by who else but Heather Thompson, a cast member of Real Housewives of New York City. So even if she doesn't have a legitimate claim, it's
high stakes drama.
It's bra
here
drama
in Atlanta.
It's panty drama. What better drama than underwear related drama?
Exactly.
I mean, that's as close to a sex scandal as you can get without being completely crass, right? It's business, it's legitimate, but it's still about your underwear. I don't know. Just thought it was worth a mention. And speaking of things, my pleasure. Happy to, you know, keep everybody paying attention on a Wednesday morning. Speaking of things, when is the cold weather going to stop? Because it's March 13th in Atlanta. It's not October.
Right.
Alas.
As previously discussed.
I moved here a long, long, long... David, how long have you been here?
About 20 years.
Okay, so me too. I've been here a little bit more than 20 years. And I moved here because I came down from upstate New York where I was in college. And it was March, early March. And I was doing my, you know, interviews from college. And it was, I swear to you, it was like 4 feet of snow up there. Like snow up to your gazunga bungas. And I came down here and it was blue skies, 74 degrees. And I was like, yes, sold. Sign me up. Where do I get a job? Let's go. And it's March 13th and it's 40 degrees. Not okay.
Yeah. Usually we're
warmer
itching upon
now.
Summer
yeah.
at this point in, on the weather spectrum. So this is unusual.
I know. I'm not happy
and
with
it. I was wearing shorts yesterday.
And I think it is supposed to start. We are at the beginning of the warm up, right?
Right.
Okay. All right. I just want to check because I need warm weather right now. I need some happy stuff.
Spring will come.
All right. So
I promise.
Getting back to the crass and unfortunate. Michael Vick has a new book out and was planning to come to Atlanta and a couple of other cities to do a book signing at Barnes & Noble. And no, canceled because of threats. So apparently there are 1,000 people had RSVP'd to attend the book signing in Atlanta, according to, I think, Michael Vick's website. I can't swear to that. Oh, no, I'm sorry. According to the Philadelphia, because he plays for the Eagles now. So it was on one of the Philadelphia websites. PhillyMag.com said 1,000 people were signed up. So I guess there's people that want to hear his story, want to hear him, are interested in what he has to say. But there's those crackerjacks, those quacks out there who just are like, you know what? You're a bad dude. We don't. And they started making threats. Here's what puzzles me about this. So, okay, I think we all admit that what he was doing and what he was involved in at the time was not good. And he paid the price for that, right? I mean, it's not like he got off scot-free. He paid the price. I guess one could argue that he's back making a ton of money and he's back playing sports, so maybe he didn't pay enough of a price. I don't know. That's, you know, a debate that could be had or not. But the bottom line is, if you're making threats, aren't you kind of going into the same lower level of not okayness that perhaps Michael Vick was in when he was doing bad things?
Exactly.
So what's the logic there?
No, there's no logic.
Right. What is wrong with people? That's my question. I mean, I don't think that I would want to read the book just because I'm not that interested in him in general. And certainly if you don't want to give him money, don't buy the book. Don't go to the signing. But if other people are interested and want to, and also this is the other thing that I find really amazing. A lot of the comments apparently were that people were very aggravated with Barnes & Noble for planning to host the event and were sort of saying, I'm never going to buy from you again. I'm done with you, Barnes & Noble.
That's horrible. What? Free speech? Hello? Do you know what country you're in? That's absurd.
Exactly.
It's obscene, really.
And also, Amazon, I'm quite sure, sells the book as well. So you're going to boycott Amazon too? I mean, it's so dumb. And also the book industry, I just want to weep for I used to own a bookstore. And the book industry is in so much trouble anyway.
Exactly. I mean, they are struggling to find reason enough to keep these places alive and thriving
and
with
honestly,
commerce. And so coming up with whatever creative promotional scheme you can do to bring people in is what a business is going to do. And
I mean, I am not.
I should do.
I had a small independent store. It wasn't Barnes & Noble. It was a tiny little store and whatever. But 1,000 people coming to my store for an event would have made my month. And I'm sure it wouldn't make Barnes & Noble's month, but it certainly would make their day and, you know, probably their week, maybe even a week and a half or 2 weeks worth of sales if they had 1,000 people come into a Barnes & Noble. So to see that business get lost because some people are ridiculous, kind of sad.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. Speaking about football.
Speaking of.
What a segue. Atlanta reaching an agreement with the Falcons on a new stadium.
Woohoo.
David Rodriguez rolls his eyes.
Touchdown.
I know, that's the headline. Touchdown. Woohoo.
So, yeah, like all parties came together.
You knew
on
they
this.
Would.
Yes, exactly.
And they did.
It was something that I don't think they were going to back down from.
No.
And
it's going to be expensive.
A deal had to be reached.
But the
taxpayer isn't going to pay for it.
No, they're not. They are.
I mean,
they're not.
Not directly.
Well, of course, not directly. That would be way too obvious.
What, you haven't sent in your check yet?
I'm contributing. And do I get anything for that?
She will in April.
Yeah, right? When I get my refund, yeah. I want to just say also that the thing I think one of the issues is that, or one of the nice things, I guess, is that the Arthur Blank Family Foundation and Invest Atlanta are also committing to providing $15 million each for a total of $30 million towards the redevelopment of English Avenue, Vine City, and Castleberry Hill neighborhoods. So that...
Right. I liked that it involves a commitment to really focus on the redevelopment of that whole section there. That's important for urban Atlanta.
And I would love to see... I know one of the problems in a lot of cities, we've talked about this before, wherever stadiums go, is that the surrounding areas are often a mess.
Shady.
Very shady. And for good reason. I mean, who wants to have their house sort of right up next to the stadium? You know, I mean.
Unless you're in Chicago and you live in Wrigleyville, which is a really cool, hip place to live right next to the stadium.
Yeah. And so I think that's a great point, because I think the point is it can be done. And even in Boston, you know, Fenway Park is very close to some great areas. And I think it's, in a way, because older cities like that, they sort of had to. Like, you kind of have to. You can't just put them out in the middle of nowhere because nowhere doesn't exist. You got to use the land you have. And so I hope that they can do a good job of making these good surrounding areas so you're not feeling... so you're not feeling sketchy when you go down there, like, this is creepy, where you park your car somewhere far away. But also, just because I think for the city, it would be really nice to have that be kind of a nice area and not just something set off to the side that people only go to when there's a game, you know?
Yep. Yep.
I mean, like, Turner Field is nice. It's really cool. I like the stadium a lot. But then there's sort of, like, nothing else to do right around there. It'd be great if there was stuff to do when you walked out of the stadium.
Like a whole village.
Yeah.
Yes. So, the surrounding neighborhoods and to see what kind of architecture they really commit to. And
yeah,
I'm excited to see the plans.
Yeah, I think it will be interesting. So, obviously, there's a lot of story, but not for us. We just hit the headlines. All right, I brought this last story up. Sometimes I have a list. I didn't have one today, but I brought this story up because I've got two more little tidbits. But I brought this up because I always like when people are doing things that are shady. Like, I mean, these guys got caught. 8 people indicted in emissions testing fraud scheme was the...
Well, it's funny because you always, you know, everybody wonders when you get your emissions done. Like,
yeah.
Are they really doing anything?
Yeah. Like, and also, like...
What's really going on here?
And I just like people who are, like, crafty and they think of, like, ways to cheat the system. Like, I would never have the gonads to do it, but
These are type of criminals are like entrepreneurs gone wrong.
Yes.
Like, if you had applied the same ingenuity to a more legitimate way of improving the system,
right?
I mean, that would have been a better use of your brain power, perhaps.
Remember when we had Tom Creeley on? Tom Creeley is an ethics expert.
Our resident ethics.
Yeah, we love Tom.
And downtown Atlanta.
We had him on several months ago, and we talked about people stealing Tide from grocery stores, which just cracked me up. Like, apparently Tide, there's a hot black market for Tide. You should see David. I wish this was television. He's got great facial reactions. He's very quiet over there, but he's got great facial reactions. Anyway, people were stealing Tide, and I was sort of fascinated by how you get the Tide out of the store. So it got my brain all working on the puzzle of how do you do it. All right, so then this story comes up, 8 indicted in emissions testing fraud scheme, and I thought, like, okay, all right, how would you do fraud in this scenario? How would you use an emissions testing pop-up tent, whatever they do, you know, those little pop-up locations, to commit fraud? Like, what would you do? Well, I read the story, and it's kind of interesting because basically what they were doing, I think they had a legitimate emissions place that was taking the $25 or whatever it is and doing the testing. But I guess what would happen is if you failed the test, they would just say to you, well, if you want to pass it, we can hook you up for an extra however much money. And then what they would do is they would re-input your information, I guess, and hook it up to a car that they knew would pass. Right. But they would put your VIN number in and your car make and model, and then they would plug it up to a car that they knew would pass. And that's how they were doing it. So you would pay more than the $25 to get the valid inspection, but you would not have to go and get your car fixed. So obviously the way to do it legitimately would be to have somebody there to fix your car.
Right.
You know, to have somebody on site, not have a good car there to test on, but to have
an actual mechanic shop and say, we can fix this problem for you.
Right.
For another
X how much.
Right.
Right. No, these guys.
They were going after a different market. That also was trying to skirt the system.
Right. Which I can understand because I don't know about you guys, but my birthday just passed a couple weeks ago. And I wait till the last minute sometimes to get this stuff done. So, and 1 year I did not pass emissions. And I think that year I luckily had given myself enough time, but I had to take the car to a shop, get it fixed, and go back and get my emissions tested again. It was a huge pain in the butt.
Right.
So it's possible that if someone had presented me the option for an extra $25 bucks on the spot to cheat, I might have cheated. Now, I wouldn't run the ring of cheating, but I might participate. I don't know. Just saying. It's possible.
Interesting scheme.
Yeah. I wonder if there's any way we can...
I wonder how they got caught.
That's the other question. Did they proposition like a cop? Like in a police car? Sir, would you like your... I mean, I don't know how they got caught. Very interesting.
I think that the police cars don't actually have to pass emissions.
I bet you're right.
There's always a loophole.
There's
they've got like their own station system, you know.
That's right.
Like their own fill up. They've got probably.
They probably, you're right. But maybe it was the guy was, you know, it was a cop that was doing his like personal car, or maybe Or maybe there was just something odd in the system that triggered a bell or something. We'll get right back to, we're always bringing it back to the data. Maybe there was something in the data that cued them that something wasn't right. You know what I mean?
Right.
Maybe like the car was failing and then passing too quickly, or who knows? Anyway, the bottom line is busted. All right. Now, this last story I pulled for one reason and one reason only. I was hungry last night when I was pulling news stories. So I just have to also admit something.
Well,
I don't know if this is good or bad, but in the past, I think I mentioned off the air that I moved recently. I used to live a little bit closer to here, and I would often get up at 5:30 in the morning on Wednesdays and, you know, get the latest, greatest news at 5:30 in the morning and, you know, figure out what we were going to talk about, do my show prep the morning of. But now that I've moved, I have a 3-story house and my office is in the basement. And so the idea of going down there at 5:30 in the morning, as opposed to before I just grabbed my laptop and got back in bed, doesn't appeal.
No.
So I've been doing my show prep the night before. And last night when I was doing my show prep, I was really hungry. So this last story is just that a restaurant called
the food section,
yes, Red Pepper Taqueria, is coming to Buckhead. So apparently this is a second location of the restaurant. And I'm telling you, solely did I print the story because they literally listed some of the menu highlights. Barbecue chicken, beef barbacoa, tofu tacos, and 100 types of tequila. That was for you, Elizabeth. I always make you sound like a drunk. I apologize for that. I'm like, beer, Elizabeth likes that. Tequila. She's really not a drunk, people. She's a very successful, you know, highly paid business consultant who just likes a cocktail once and again, like most people. All right, moving on before I dig the hole any deeper. Red Pepper Taqueria, it's going to be at the corner of basically of Piedmont and Peachtree, sort of right there. So nice. Around the corner a little bit on Piedmont. There's a place right now called Barca Tapas and Bar that's going away. So this will be taking the place of that for people looking for something new in Buckhead. Okay, that's all I have. Should we call it a day? Oh, no, we have David here. We have Spider-Man in the chair. David Rodriguez, Microsoft. Before we get into big data, which I'm going to make you explain from the beginning because I was in IT a long time ago. I've had a lot of different careers. And one of the things, I've said this on the show before, but one of the things that always irritates me about IT specifically, but many fields, is that they just constantly come up with new names for the same thing. Like they repack, like the cloud. You know, like it's not new. It's just a new name that sounds fluffy and cute. But really, so I'm going to make you explain big data just so I can get my head around it, because there's always been data, certainly, and there's always been lots of it. And people have always had to farm through it to get their information. But in the last, I don't know, what is it, year, 2 years, 3 years, this term big data has sort of come into the headlines. So I'm going to get you to explain that. But before I do, I would love for you to tell us a little bit about you, how long you've been with Microsoft, what you do there. You know, any gossip you want to know? I'm kidding.
Sure. So again, my name is David Rodriguez. I am a solutions specialist for Microsoft, focusing on our application platform technologies. And that's just a long word to describe our database technology of SQL Server.
Okay.
So we oftentimes talk about a solution area, and then there are products that Microsoft delivers in those solution areas. And one of those key products is our database product of SQL Server. We also have another product called SharePoint Server. And those two brought together with Office, which you may have heard of before.
It's familiar.
Yeah. Is really our leading kind of flagship technology set to deliver analytics, business intelligence, and big data.
All right. Well, before you go any further, I think everyone listening knows what Office is, right? Everybody
sure.
uses Word or Excel or both or PowerPoint or all those different things. And I think probably there's another group of people, taking it a little bit more technical, who probably know what SQL Server is, database tool, right?
Sure.
So that you can find out what data you have stored. Okay, great. Now, what's SharePoint Server?
Sure. Let me take a step back first, because you'd asked me the question about who am I?
Yes.
Here.
Yes. So got off track.
Exactly. I think I pushed you off track, so I'm sorry about that.
No, please.
Back on.
Yep. I need all the help I can get.
So the thing I wanted to just kind of cover in terms of, you know, my background is I've been in Atlanta for quite a while. I'm not a native. I came from the South, which is really by way of the North, by way of the South kind of a thing. I was born in Michigan, lived in Florida the bulk of my life. And a lot of times I like to say that, you know, the, it's kind of an enclave of all of the people that moved from Michigan because it was so cold. They wanted to go south.
Yeah.
So they all hung out down there.
They say that. I think there's like different sections of Florida that are like known for being Midwestern or Northern or whatever. So
yes. And my dad, I'm of Cuban heritage. So my dad was born in Cuba. And when he lived in, you know, Michigan, it was a lot different climate.
Yeah, just a little.
A little different. Yeah. Like you're talking about with your New York days.
Yeah.
So so they obviously moved to Florida for better weather. And,
nice.
And then I moved up to Georgia for Georgia Tech.
Gotcha.
So I went there as undergraduate and graduate degrees.
And you got stuck.
Well, I love this place. So Atlanta is an awesome, awesome place to live. I've really had options to move to both Seattle and other country, other states, and even some options to go to South American countries to kind of do certain jobs. But really, Atlanta is the place that I want to spend the rest of my life.
That's a commitment. I like that.
We like that here on Good Morning Atlanta.
We do. We're pro Atlanta here.
I'm very happy with it.
Okay. So
I'll jump back into the big
moved around a little bit, came here for Georgia Tech, undergrad and grad, and then straight to Microsoft or something in between?
Yeah, good point. So I actually was one of these long-term students.
I stayed
I stayed in college for, I think I was there like 12 years.
I'm sure your parents were thrilled by that.
They loved
like,
it.
Like, really, honey? Are you going to leave college anytime soon?
Well, I realized at near the end that you can't retire from college as a student. You actually have to be a professor
to
in order
retire.
To get some kind of
You
got to
be on the other end.
Yeah. So it really was a crimp in my style there. And at that time, I had been married for several years, and my wife was like, hey, it'd be nice if you got a job. You know, we could kind of live somewhere other than student housing, which is where we were at. And at the same time, the Olympics came to the U.S.,
Atlanta. Yeah.
And we were living in the Olympic Village. So Georgia Tech campus was the Olympic Village.
Right.
So we got kicked out of our apartment. They're like, hey, dude, you got to go. We're putting some athletes in here. And so that kind of helped me transition into the real world. And so I went manufacturing. I worked for a company that made ball bearings because it's all about ball bearings these days.
Yeah, well, they're critical. Can't do anything without a ball bearing, for God's sake.
Nothing happens without ball bearings.
Exactly.
They are in everything. You have no idea.
No one moves a car without a lot of ball bearings or needle bearings being involved. So so I did that and mainly in an IT perspective. So working with the organization in order to influence the plants and leveraging technology. I remember when I first started there, we had these guys that would say, I never seen a ball bearing made with a computer. You know,
yeah.
They have this kind of crotchety conversation.
Right.
And then usually by the end, I was always kind of needling them with my finger and saying, hey, you can't make a ball bearing in this plant without a computer because the entire process was managed by computer. So it was kind of an interesting transition. So then I went into general purpose IT consulting, a lot of data oriented work. And then I joined Microsoft 13 years ago, specifically focused on our data platform and those technologies, and have been enjoying it ever since.
You know, I don't know if it's just the people that I've come across, but I've met a fair number of people over the course of my career and life that work for Microsoft and stay there a long time. So that's a good sign. It's a good place to work.
It is an excellent place to work. It's a company that honors the employees. It's really a high-powered location too. You really enjoy working with people that have really thoughtful conversations, and they're focused and passionate, and so it's really an enjoyable atmosphere. It's a lot of stress, but it's really fun.
So there's, you know, obviously this is not the headquarters of Microsoft here,
no.
But there are satellite offices of Microsoft, I guess, all over the country and
all
the,
over
world.
The world. Absolutely.
And so, like, what happens in the Atlanta version of Microsoft? What do you guys do? Work with clients specifically? Is there a sales function? Like, talk a little bit
sure.
about that.
Well, great question too, because a lot of times people will say, you know, well, developing software is only done in Redmond, which is our corporate headquarters.
Right.
But we actually have software development that happens all over the world as well. Mm-hmm. So the way to think about our office structure is generally we have offices spread across the world that are closer to our customers so that we can engage directly with them and help them understand how our technologies and solutions can meet their business needs. So if you want to put a word around it, you could say that we're a sales office, and we're focused on the greater Southeast area. We have several groups within the Atlanta office that support both public sector We also support commercial sector, which is one of the groups that I'm a part of, from mid-sized businesses all the way up to global enterprises.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. All right. So now let's back up to my earlier question. I'm going in circles.
I love it.
Office, SQL Server, SharePoint Server.
Sure. I jumped the gun.
Listen. Okay. I take full responsibility for my own inability to stay on track.
Well, no, I'm saying I jumped the gun because I started talking about products when we really shouldn't be.
Right.
We should be talking about the business solution. And then let me bring it back to what those three products are at the end, if that's okay.
Okay, great. So I do want to, you know, everybody in business is not focused on the IT side of things.
Sure.
I think, like you said, you need a IT to even make a ball bearing anymore, right?
Exactly.
So we all know that without it, we wouldn't be doing our jobs. We wouldn't be on the air right now if we didn't have a computer in front of us, right? With Microsoft products running, I might add.
Thank you.
But you know, I think a lot of people are just more focused on whatever their particular job is, whether it's sales, whether it's manufacturing, whatever, consulting, whatever it is. So big data, this term, big data, is flying around for the last couple of years, and you have to be kind of living with your head underground if you hadn't heard the term, at least. But I don't know if anyone's like me, whereas when I start to hear these new terms sometimes, I nod and smile as if I know what it is, but I don't exactly know what it is. So for me and potentially some other listeners who aren't quite clear on it, what the heck is big data?
Sure. The way to think of it is data has been growing almost exponentially. And if you think about what's going to happen in the next, let's say, 5 years or so, we're going to generate as much data information as we have generated in the last 5,000 years of human history.
Wow.
So it's an amazing amount of stuff.
Yeah.
And so that's why we call it big data, because it's this volume that is increasing at such a pace that it's almost impossible to be able to grapple with traditional tools and technologies like an Excel spreadsheet or anything like that. You just can't track 10,000 social network expressions about your radio show or a person's business that are happening literally every 5 minutes.
And so to some extent, it's happening, this exponential growth is happening because we're just creating so much more data with all, like you said, all the social networking and and because everything is computerized and systemized now and all of that. Is that accurate?
So an example is if you think about that manufacturing plant I was talking about, some of the plants that I worked in, they had very antiquated technologies, and they were able to generate these bearings, but the amount of data that you could collect about what the generation or the creation of each bearing was minuscule. It would be probably like, you know, 1 byte or 2 bytes of information per bearing.
Right.
Now, every single tool throughout the entire process of this creation, which could be 50 or 100 different tools, is actually generating streams of information. Like every single reading, 10,000 times an hour, you're doing measurements of the size of the bearing, the amount of steel that's taken off. It's just an amazing amount of streamed information.
Right.
Now that's all capturable. In the past, it wasn't even instrumented. You didn't have the way of looking at it. And if you think about social networking, we just never had humans generating this amount of information. But it's not just humans. It's any device out there. It's your cell phone.
Right.
Every single time you walk around, every location that you're at, you're tracking information.
Yeah.
Now, that information has usually in the past been thrown away. But now, because of this big data revolution, we're capturing the information and storing it somewhere. And that's really the uniqueness of it. So I agree with you. BI in the past was, you know, this big word. We have business intelligence. And that was kind of the new thing at that time. And now we've got big data, and it's kind of the new thing. But I would say that the way to describe big data as legitimately a good term and a viable term is it's taking serious computational power and using the latest technologies in artificial intelligence and machine learning and applying that to seriously large data sets as well as highly complex sets of data in order to create, you know, actionable insights that businesses can use that data for.
So I'm going to put on my like old lady crotchety, I'm getting out the cane, the walker, and I'm going to say, well, what do I need that for, Sonny? Like, I mean, here's the problem. I can imagine having this conversation with my parents who were in their, you know, late 70s, early 80s, and them saying, well, why do I need to know? Why isn't the ball bearing the same ball bearing at the end of the day? I love that we have that as our example. But, you know, why do I care about all that nonsense? What isn't that just clogging up the system with all this extra data? What's the point?
Good question. And you're absolutely right. When we look at it from generation to generation, the technology as well as the population are actually kind of having to develop new skills and new understanding of the benefits. So if you think about it from that perspective of, yes, a bearing is still a bearing, but the quality of creating those bearings is has often been done in a hindsight view. So if I'm going to create bearings and I've been doing it for the last 5 years, my ability to affect the quality and improve or even improve the process to make them so that I can do it 50% less expensively,
right,
is really difficult because you're always looking in the hindsight. But with big data, it's taken that computational power and it's given you the insight in a near real-time basis sometimes. So it gives you the ability to, as you're building these products, to be able to look at the data set and say, oh, yes, we can change this and it'll modify it, and it helps you streamline the process. But that's just a piece of it, because the other piece is now I can take insight from my customer base in some social networking arena, and I can see the current consumer sentiment on that bearing.
Yeah.
And I can look at it and I can say, oh, people are starting to really talk about this bearing, or people are starting to say that this one's – it's failing in their car or something like that,
right,
talking about the emissions inspections.
Right.
So, you know, it's not – you know, let's go to a different thing. Instead of bearing, maybe it's gas caps, because
right,
gas caps are measured in every emissions inspection.
Sure.
If my gas cap is starting to get bad press because it's failing emissions inspections and people have to buy new ones, then I want to resolve that really quickly in my manufacturing process. So it's merging data sets that, frankly, have never even been considered to be pulled together, and then giving it to a single marketing manager or a product manager in a given company, and then letting them see those both dimensions and make a decision like, let's not change the line the way that we thought we were going to do it because we were going to put in a less expensive component that might have reduced our quality or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Interesting. Elizabeth, you have a lot of big data in your life.
Absolutely. I mean, one of my latest clients, we're dealing with massive amounts of information and how to route that information to the correct processing agent, and then how to effectively store it. And all big companies are, I mean, even small companies are wrestling with, where do we put all of this information? How do we effectively figure out what is the intelligence in it? And how do we store it? So what are you guys working on and bringing to market in that arena?
Well, thank you. And that is a very important aspect. And I like the fact that you brought up there's huge, large organizations, and then there are very small organizations that have really, frankly, the same problems, just sometimes at a different scale, but sometimes not. And what we're doing that's kind of unique in the industry is we're focused on making sure that we make access to big data ubiquitous. So everybody has access to it. And so if I'm a small organization and I want to start capturing the information you're talking about, it may be something as simple as web logs. People come to my website. I've got a really small website. I have maybe 5,000 people. Maybe that Barnes & Noble situation you're talking about, if I'm a small store that has people coming in, maybe they're coming in on my web presence as well. I want to track what they're doing on that site. And in the past, we haven't captured that and really leveraged it very well as organizations. But now with big data, what you're going to do is you're going to capture those logs. You're going to store them into a repository, some kind of data location. But you're not going to actually modify those logs or update them or push them into a database, which is what's traditionally been done. And then what you're going to do is do queries off of that and in its raw form, which we call unstructured data, and you're going to make it structured. You're going to give it some kind of structure. You're going to say, okay, I want to track every click on my website, and I want to know, you know, the image behind the click, because I may have that data, right? When that button is on there, maybe the image behind it is one image versus another image versus another image. I want to know which one of those images is probably impacting the people clicking on that button. So that kind of analysis can really help you, no matter how large of an organization you are. And the benefit of what big data allows is the ability to capture that information, to store it very inexpensively, and then to be able to do some kind of rich analysis on top of it with leveraging high-power computer technology. Now, one key thing that you brought up is about the cloud. And I joke about that sometimes with friends, but the cloud actually is new. And my wife always says, oh, it's just the internet. And I was like, no. So the cloud is really thought around, if you think about it, it's delivering services, right? It's giving you some place that you can put stuff that you didn't have in the past. Sometimes in the past we had the internet where we could click on a website, connect to a given location, and maybe interact with that site. But we didn't have the ability to actually store our stuff there. And that's really what Microsoft brings to bear in terms of this big data scenario. We have a cloud service called Azure, Windows Azure, and we have something called HD Insight. It's a full implementation of the Hadoop infrastructure, the Apache infrastructure.
Uh-oh.
Sorry about that.
That's your cue. You're screwing up. Someone's calling to tell you you're doing it all wrong.
Exactly.
Get off the air, Rodriguez. Where's your Spider-Man mask?
Sorry about that.
it's all right. It was a nice ring, at least.
Well, thank you. It's a Windows mobile phone.
There you
Windows
go. 8.
Wonderful phone.
There
you go. So our Azure infrastructure supports Hadoop, and Hadoop is a very big kind of tag name for big data. A lot of times people are equating that with big data. It's not. It's simply just one of the tools of this big data problem that we use to leverage. But we support that in an Azure environment. So a customer can say, you know, I'd like to start storing some information. I want to get in on this big data stuff, but I really don't want to buy, $500,000 worth of hardware and software. I don't want to hire 5 really smart IT guys that I'm going to pretty much have to hire to figure out what my stuff is and how to make it work. So this HD Insight on our cloud service, frankly, just they can log in very inexpensively. They can spin it up very quickly and have a low barrier to entry in terms of the cost. They can manage the data very inexpensively by just throwing these log files up there. And again, it's a cloud service, so it's got a completely different economic model than building something on your premises. So we're really talking pennies on the dollar.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you're saying for your large organizations. If you have these large organizations, sometimes they'll have a big data warehouse. Well, to add another terabyte or two to that warehouse can sometimes be $500,000 just because there's all this infrastructure cost. To add a terabyte to this cloud service is going to be pennies on the dollar compared to that. And then you can do what you haven't done in the past. And this is another area about big data. It's treating it like almost like a digital shoebox, right? If you think about a shoebox, you know, where do you keep your receipts when you go to the store and you want to keep track of them or something like that? I usually keep them in a shoebox. I just throw them in there and then I throw them away after a while because I haven't looked at them or needed them. But it's a digital shoebox. It's a place to keep the stuff that you think you might need, but you're not sure and you don't really want to spend the time. I mean, I'm not going to go to every single receipt and start typing into my Windows phone or something like that. Oh, let me track my receipts. So it's stuff that's not of huge value, but of partial value. And that's really what organizations are doing with this big data. They're just storing it. They're putting it in their digital shoebox. And then they're trying to mine it after the fact and marry it with social networking feeds and other feeds from digital devices such as sensors.
Well, I'm glad you brought that back up because one of the things you said earlier, and Elizabeth, you might be the answer to this question, yourself personally, because what that brings up for me is one of the things you said was that people are combining data in ways that they never even would have thought of in the past. You know, looking at maybe social networking comments on a particular product versus quality measurement from a machine, right?
Yep. But
I think for a lot of people, and this may be generational as well. I mean, you know, there are, you know, maybe the older set isn't quite getting this and the younger set maybe is, and maybe some of us in the middle are, you know, depending on which way you lean, right? But I guess my question is this bringing up a whole new type of business consultant, which is why I think you might be the answer, Elizabeth, who are looking at, you know, you should be combining these two pieces of data to get this information, or you could really get a great marketing campaign by looking at this metric and this metric together that the operations guy who's just running the business might never think of. I mean, is this bringing up a whole new breed of consultants? That's my question.
Yes. And one key thing, too, to think about is that we have over time, big data has been a problem. It's the volume of data. There's also the velocity of data that we've been talking about with these feeds. And then there's the variety of data, this pulling data from all these different sources and trying to be able to make intelligent choices from it. That is still the same problem that we've had for years. It's just that it's just getting more accelerated and we have better tools for that. But that still means that we still need partners, business partners that our organizations can either acquire talent internally or they can leverage consultants to be able to deliver the insight as to, okay, I've got this classical knowledge in statistical analysis. Now I can take that and I can apply it to this big data problem. And that is creating a brand new industry of what we call a big data industry. And it's ending up to be probably, I think, about $4 billion of people acquiring big data technologies, applying those technologies to solve business problems in the next few years. So it's becoming a pretty large industry in terms of how do we deliver on the value that we can see that big data provides, and then getting it getting it delivered to the business. And that really created a brand new workforce called data scientists.
Okay, see, and that's where I was going. I'm glad there's an answer.
Yes. No, I just read an article about that, actually. I think it was John Matilski in the Oracle magazine talking about the new profession of data scientists, and that's the new – I mean, you used to call them what, like a business intelligence –
Some people call them analysts, one of those,
like, evolving terms.
Sure. Some people have called them analysts. I would say the difference with a data scientist is it's usually the statistical guys and gals. And it's the people that we've often had in the back room. We only had like one or two for a large organization, and we just hand them the data. They were the actuarials that would sit in a back room and figure out, you know, death tables and things like that. And then everyone else in the organization would just use that death table in some kind of mechanized form to be able to make decisions. Now what's happening is that those data scientists are really exploding in terms of their usefulness, and the access to all of the data that is now available turns us all into data scientists to one way or another. And so you're going to find that people that maybe don't have the classical training in statistics are leveraging tools that use statistics on the back end.
Yeah.
And that's really exploding the data, big data arena.
Well, I guess that too is all part of my question. Are the products going that way so that like the Joe average entrepreneur, consultant, business guy who's not a data scientist could look out there and say, well, we have stored in our shoebox this type of information, this type of information, and this type of information, and I can visually perhaps see those things and see that there's a way to combine them and make the most of them.
Absolutely. And that's frankly a focal point of Microsoft. We've always been about what we call democratizing IT, making it so that everybody in the organization can take advantage of information technology. It's our original vision about having a computer on every desktop, right?
Right.
And this is...
I got the chills when you said that.
It's awesome. I get the chills when I say it. We're doing great. But yeah, if you think about it, the thought process around helping everybody in the organization, everybody across the world really, to take advantage of this big data means making sure that they have an easy place to store it, making sure that the tools are abstracted enough that you don't have to be a data scientist to take advantage of it. There are going to be a lot of data scientists in the next few years, and they're going to be delivering significant value to their organizations. But what we want to do is make it so that a person that makes a decision like a marketing manager or just an analyst in a marketing team can make really good quality decisions and be able to pull together four or five different data sets and make an analysis and then go on, right? And that right there is – through our office, through SQL Server, and
look
through SharePoint
Server. Look at you
bringing
it back. Boom. Nicely
And it's
done.
Really all about us delivering these products that are designed and frankly are being used by every one of our customers and making it so that they integrate directly with big data.
Yeah.
Well, and how, as we move forward with this trend, how much more insight are companies going to be able to pull from the information that's flowing through them? And I guess how much more quickly would you anticipate they're going to be able to do that? Because time and the ease of making a timely decision, I think, is where you really are able to measure the impact from a business and a dollars and cents standpoint.
Sure. And I think that what we're going to find over the next few years is it's an emerging industry in many respects. We have some big players like Microsoft that have made investment for years and have focused on empowering the end users, right? Making sure that people can make these choices quickly. Business intelligence tools are being revamped and modified. Our business intelligence tool, obviously Excel, is ubiquitous, right? Everybody uses it. It's available to do really rich analysis. But the thing about end user tools is if I'm doing end user analysis in that tool and I want to share it with you, then I'm sending you an Excel file, right? And we may be able to share a little bit, but that's not really more of a global sharing. It's kind of just you and I. When we start talking about how do I explore some analytical technique and then provide it to a broader audience, maybe the whole company, or maybe even to people outside of our company. Then we talk about things like our SharePoint product that provides the ability to share analytics at that level. And then you go to another level that we're talking about from a data perspective of data as a platform. I mean, I've talked about products just recently, you know, Excel, SQL Server, SharePoint. Those are products that we deliver. But if you think about it, data as a platform, data as something that you can just kind of swim through and surf through and then pull different pieces from is really where the movement is occurring.
Yeah, and see, this is where I get confused because, again, I'm going to admit that I'm, you know, sort of old school in this way, but I could write a SQL Server stored procedure like nobody's business. I'm great at that.
Good.
And I can go in Excel and I can look through and do some stuff. But if I have an Excel spreadsheet that has some stuff and I have a SQL Server database that has some other stuff, and then you have some unstructured web logs that have some stuff, how do I combine all that and get one answer?
Yes, you've defined the challenge of big data is pulling all of this together. And frankly, you brought up a great scenario. Excel 2013 was actually designed with this scenario in mind. So we've included in it the concept of a data marketplace and back to the cloud, right? Because you really don't want
to
manage
– To the cloud.
Yeah, to the cloud. You don't want to manage all your own data, right? You want to manage a subset of your data. Maybe you want to shoebox another set of that data. And then – and by manage, I mean, you know, figure out what's in it and make sure that you keep it clean and all this other stuff. So you're going to have a database for that probably or an Excel spreadsheet if you're kind of a small business. And then there's the cloud, and the cloud has just unlimited potential because how many times have you ever opened up an Excel spreadsheet or something and looked at zip codes? And you know, maybe you tried to clean some data with zip codes and figure out what the – you had the zip code and maybe had somebody's address and then their state code was wrong, right? That happens all the time. It's dirty data. It's everywhere. But there are technologies out there that could just manage the cleaning of all zip codes. So why would you as a small business focus your time, spend 2 hours this week going through my customer list and modifying state codes so that when I send them letters to – incite them to do more business with me, that they're going to get them because they're not in Kansas, they're in Kentucky, right?
Right.
So that process is that external data source. It's something in the cloud. It's the cloud being able to deliver you a cleaning attribute. So it's thinking about composable applications. And another example is we've got all these mobile devices. Everybody has a mobile device with 400 different apps on it. Right.
At least
none of these apps talk to each other.
Right.
They're just individual things that don't really have any kind of connection. The next generation there is something like composable applications. And by the way, I'm speaking as myself, not as a Microsoft representative on that, because I don't have access to the mobile team's futures.
Duly noted.
But you know, that's really the way to think about it is these things have to start interacting together. Well, the platform of data is the way to do it, right? If I can have, like, for instance, all the data on my phone married with all the data in my SkyDrive, which is, you know, my Word, my Excel, all those documents and everything like that, and then marry that with data that I can purchase from some syndicated source, then I can really make some really positive decisions about and even looking at a source such as social networking where I can just see, you know, what are people thinking about the people in my contact list so that I can – you know, gauge which ones of those I want to market to first. And that whole process just doesn't exist. But if you had all those data feeds abstracted as just – they would look like a table. They would look like an Excel file, right? So they're easy to understand. And then all I need to do is just drag one of those into my screen and drag another one and say, yeah, their name is what I want to link on. Then I've applied big data, but I haven't had to spend, you know, tens of millions of dollars acquiring – all of the feeds for all of my social networks and store them somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's a difference because most people have tried to store the information and we've had these big data warehousing projects that have been very costly and a lot of them have not been effective. And now it's really more about just inferring information from the data as it flows.
Interesting. Some of this stuff is hard to get your head around as just a regular Joe without lots of, you know, college degrees at 12 years or so of college, you know, just saying.
what I would say is that I think the most important thing is big data is taking something that other people have spent a lot of time making PhDs and doing all this other work and designing these really cool repositories and shoeboxes. They've also spent a lot of time abstracting that. Microsoft, we've invested a lot of our time and effort and our brightest in investing in abstracting out the shoebox and making it something that you can open up Excel and be able to scan through.
It sounds to me like you guys have, obviously, you guys know exactly what you're doing and have a lot of probably tools and, you know, probably different subsets of tools work for different businesses and, you know, different product sets. And whether you use the cloud or you use something stored, you know, if it's, I don't know, more secure or something, you keep certain things in the office and certain things out. If people, you know, your local customers, if people or if someone's listening and they think like, I could really use somebody from Microsoft to sit down and go through this with me, what's the best way to get in touch directly with the Atlanta office? Should they call you at home?
I think you've asked a question I don't have an answer to. So I don't have specific information on that, but we do have an Atlanta office. We are in the phone book. And,
I love it. Wait a minute. Big data, phone book.
We have a phone book. Actually,
They can go to the website probably.
Sure.
And, just...
and we do have a Southeast office.
Okay.
And we have account teams that support large businesses, enterprise businesses, small and medium businesses. And each group of business entities has kind of like a coverage model. And we also have a vast array of partners. And those partners are consulting partners that can deliver on solutions directly to our customers. We're a very leveraged company in terms of our partnership. So it's an integrated model where those partners can deliver services and solutions based on our platform and meet the customer where the customer is. So like, for instance, in your scenario, you've got a lot of customers that are asking you questions. We work with our partners to make sure that those questions can get answered very quickly.
And David, would you say that most companies have an opportunity in that they could make a better use of the big data that they're acquiring and that's currently flowing through their back-end systems?
Yes. And I think that's it first of all starts off, in my opinion, with the digital shoebox. You've got to start capturing the data. When I first started in that ball bearing company, we were throwing away all data for all plant information that was more than 5 years old. And I said, well, don't we want to at least back it up? And the answer was no. There's just no value to that data. Now, that answer wouldn't be that way, right?
Yeah.
So it's capture the data, maintain the data, and keep it vibrant. Back then, the cost of maintaining data on a disk was very expensive. Now the cost of maintaining data on the disk is significantly lower. And it's becoming to the point where, you know, you're better off maintaining the data than wishing that you had.
It's so funny. What's that? Do you guys know that TV commercial where there's the – I wish I knew what it was for. This is terrible. But the guy is sitting at the table and with a bunch of little kids, and he's like, is bigger better? And the kids are like, well, yeah, bigger is better because I want a bigger treehouse or whatever, you know. And then he's like, is more better? Like there's several different commercials. And it just makes me think about big data in this way because with technology in general, I think to your point of keeping this older data – we always, once you have something, you want more of that. Like, I don't really want my phone call data tracked in some ways, right? Like, I don't care. I don't go back and look at the phone calls I made. I don't need to know that I was on the phone with California last Friday for 3 minutes. Who gives it? But then when I want to know, it better be there.
Yep.
So it's like 9, 11.
Right, which I think everybody thinks of, you know, now that we're all compiling our tax documents.
Right. All of a sudden, right? It's like, you know.
What? My, you know, banks haven't kept the last like 10 years of my statement records online for immediate access for me?
Right. Right. Exactly.
I have to order that?
Exactly. It's like, I don't need it until I need it. And then, and it's even more true in business, but even as an individual, I don't care about it. I don't need it. I don't want it until I need it and want it. For some reason, I'm going back and I'm getting ready to sell the house I've owned for 13 years. And I'm like, wait, what is the size of my lot? I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, and if that data were somewhere, boy, I would be grabbing for it. So,
well, and it used to be that you had to keep track of every single thing that you spent on that house so that you could get it deducted from the capital gains.
Yeah.
Right. So it became a really big issue.
Yeah.
One thing that you said that kind of made me think about a way that we've applied big data, the bigger is better question. Is that when you think about bigger is better, there are ways for machine learning to do stuff that humans just can't do. When the Haitian earthquake occurred, there were a lot of workers that tried to go down to Haiti to kind of work with the Haitians to help them for relief efforts. And one of the challenges they found is that very few of those relief workers understood Creole. And obviously the Haitian population only spoke Creole. So it was very difficult to kind of communicate. One of the Microsoft researchers took big data and took analysis of just massive amounts of dialects and words and was able to process it. And then in a few days, create literally a translator that would translate English to Creole and Creole to English.
Wow.
And that was something that just hadn't existed at that point.
Chills again.
Exactly. And so within a few days, I think it was like 5 days or something like that, he wrote a white paper on it. You're able to now have this live translation model that a relief worker can be talking to somebody and understanding that person and then translating it without having to, you know, find 50 or 100 or 1,000 people that would be relief worker helpers and interpreters. And so it really allowed them to deliver a big data solution, machine learning applied because of that bigger is better. It was only because of just the massive amounts of data he was able to push through that machine learning that all of the dialect pieces could be used to create that translator.
That's fascinating.
And that's what we're going to find. And so you'll say that some people will say, well, I don't need it, right?
Right.
But you're using it.
Yeah.
Right? And like you said with the phone thing, your phone system is using it. They're trying to figure out how can they monetize the fact that they've got free unlimited wireless.
Right.
Right? Because that at a time, it was a great marketing thing. But now that everybody's downloading all their movies and everything, it's flooding the system.
Right.
So they have to be able to manage that so that obviously we can still have some phone service and be able to pay for it.
Right.
So there,
right.
There's all this analytics that we're living through, just like you can't drive around without a ball bearing. We just can't live without big data at the moment. It's happening all around us, no matter whether we know it or not.
Right. We are very tied to our technology. And, you know, even if more is not always better, we still always want more. Right. So we're just about out of time here. We started late, so I think we can end late, you know. That's how I play. I play fair. But we've been talking with David Rodriguez from Microsoft. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
It's been really fascinating. I could probably talk about this more. Don't you think, Elizabeth?
Absolutely.
I feel like it's...
We'd love to have you come back.
We would. It's so good to keep up with the technology and, you know, kind of like get the primer, but then also sort of think about the future and how it's all going to be applied. So I love when we get to talk about stuff like this. It's really fun.
Right. Fascinating from both an enterprise, the enterprise consultant in me loves to think about the possibilities for a giant Fortune 500 company, but also the entrepreneur in me is really, you know, fascinated with the innovation that is possible leveraging some of these new technologies.
Right. And I always loved the you know, looking at it from that big enterprise standpoint. But then for me as more of a, you know, entrepreneur, small business owner, individual, like thinking about how the technology is going to trickle down and be available to me for smaller, you know, but that's going to take time. But it's cool to know that it's out there and it's coming, you know.
You know, one thing I would say on that is you said it's going to take time. It's actually probably going to take less time because the empowering technologies of the cloud make it so easy. The barriers of entries aren't there anymore.
Yeah.
You can get into big data for a few $1,000s and, you know, and a credit card.
So what you're saying is I should stop poo-pooing the cloud.
Start getting into big data. Give me your credit card. I'll get you on there.
Nice. You want to go shopping with my yes. credit card too? While you're... Okay. All right. Well, I think that's about all we have time for. So once again, thanks to David Rodriguez, if I can say it clearly, for joining us from Microsoft. And of course, thanks to our sponsor, World Trade Center Atlanta. Learn more about them by visiting WTCAtlanta.com. I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon. You've been listening to Business Radio X, a proud 2013 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at AtlantaDowntown.com.
We'll see you next week.